I want to spend my initial time giving a sense of how I tend to think about free speech issues and how I hope that I can encourage others to think about some free speech issues in the future. And what I'm trying to avoid, and I think this is consistent with what we just heard, tending to the tendency to think about these issues in two dimensions, to think about them in a kind of binary. I think it's important to recognize that much of what we disagree about when it comes to free speech issues has the same number of dimensions and the same amount of texture that we find in life itself. Free speech issues don't arise in the abstract, right? They don't even typically arise in the context of a law being passed by a legislature, right? They arise in the context of conflicts between people involving specific institutions, involving specific degrees of sensibility, specific degrees of proportionality, specific kinds of burdens. And to give a sense of what I mean by this, I thought I would just imagine and catalog a range of controversies. I've made these up, although some of them you'll recognize. They're fact patterns. I came up with 16. And I want you all to think about just how you might adjudicate these conflicts. I don't mean in court, but in trying to think about what the right answers to these questions might be. What would you want to know in order to adjudicate these questions? What is the answer depend on? What are the relevant facts that we care about? So scenario one, I said there are 16, I'll go quickly. Scenario one, the legislature passes a law criminalizing sedition, okay? Scenario two, legislature passes a law criminalizing pornography, okay? Scenario three, FBI arrests someone who is standing in front of a large but unarmed crowd outside the Capitol, telling them that the election has been stolen, that they need to take their country back. That's scenario three. So scenario four, sanitation department fires the head of its IT team because that person has been posting racist social media posts. Scenario five, police department fires a police officer because that person has chosen to tattoo a swastika to his forehead. Scenario six, college administrator at a public university fires a tenured professor for writing an article suggesting that race is a biological category, and they just disagree with that. Scenario seven, the faculty, not the administrator now, the faculty at the same public university refuses tenure to a professor for writing the same article, which the faculty thinks is bogus. Scenario eight, the admissions office of the same public university. Well, it's not the admissions office. This is the dean of students, let's say, at the same public university, suspends a student because that person has been using racial epithets in a social media post. Scenario nine, same dean of students, same public university, but they don't suspend the student. They just require the student to undergo sensitivity training. Scenario 10, now we're in the admissions office of this university, and public university, and they learn that a student who's applied to the university is the leader of his local Ku Klux Klan chapter, and so they refuse admission to that student. Scenario 11, local municipal theater refuses to host the speech of a Holocaust denier. They host other speech, but not this person's speech. Scenario 12, same local theater, they refuse to host an art installation of a naked man masturbating. Scenario 13, the police arrest a man who has solicited women to engage in sex acts with him for pay. Scenario 14, same man, but he offers the defense that he intends to upload recordings of the sex acts to a streaming device, to a streaming service, and charge people to view them, making women the women actors rather than sex workers. Scenario 15, a man blogs a first-person account of his sex life with his ex-girlfriend without her consent. He is sued for invading her privacy. Scenario 16, same man does the same thing, but he uses photos and videos instead of writing about his sex life. So that's the 16 scenarios. I could come up with 50 more, or 100 more, we probably all could. And my concern is that when we engage in free speech debates, we tend to ask whether, quote, the government is burdening speech on the basis of its content or on the basis of its viewpoint. And if it is, then the strictest of scrutiny applies, because we all know that free speech is the most important right of all. It's the first among equals or something like that. All of the examples I've suggested involve public actors burdening speech on the basis of content or viewpoint. I think at least arguably they all involve public institutions burdening speech on the basis of content or viewpoint. But it's facile, in my view, to think of all of those situations as simple binaries in which strict scrutiny must apply or not apply. Right? Some of the cases may be easy, right? The first one, the legislature criminalizing sedition, is imposing the harshest of sanctions in a situation in which we should be deeply concerned about the government trying to protect itself from criticism. Penalization of core political speech raises the most urgent of First Amendment concerns, as we all know. The problem is that we tend to talk about free speech as if that's the paradigm case, right? That's the interesting problem for which strong free speech norms are the solution. I believe very deeply in strong free speech norms, but I also believe that cases as clean as a legislature passing a law banning sedition are outliers, at least in the United States. These are the kind of pathological cases, in the words of my colleague Vince Blasi. And I don't find it particularly productive to structure free speech doctrine around the assumption that the government is pathological. Governments do all kinds of things. Some of them are bad, some of them are good, right? So the problem is that it makes it look like hard cases are easy cases, and that easy cases are hard cases. And it denies decision makers the resources needed to understand when threats to free expression are serious threats and when they are less serious threats. And so I go back to the questions I asked when I went into my long string of examples, which is, what would you want to know in order to adjudicate or decide these cases? Right? What does the answer depend on? What are the relevant facts? For, I think, precisely one of those cases, one of those 16, the sedition case, which again is the one that's least likely to arise in the modern United States, I think the relevant facts are whether a government actor is burdening speech on the basis of viewpoint, right? As if we know that, we know that this is a problematic law, that's the core case that the current paradigm is built around. But in all of the other cases, we want to know a bunch of other things, right? We want to know, for example, what is the nature of the burden, right? Is it a prison, or is it sensitivity training, or is it something in between? Amazingly, First Amendment doctrine in the United States does not ask this question, right? A burden is a burden, we are told. This leads to what are, in my view, absurd results in some cases, such as when, for example, a public campaign finance law in Arizona is said to violate the First Amendment because giving money to a publicly financed candidate in response to greater spending by a privately financed candidate burdens the speech of the privately financed candidate, right? This is an actual Supreme Court case. In addition to the nature of the burden, we should want to know the nature of the public institution, right? What kind of government actor are we talking about? What is its mission? What are its legitimate goals and objective? What is its level of expertise? What are the indicia of trust in the decisions that it makes? A university structuring or trying to structure its learning environment is not the same thing as a police officer trying to get allegedly dangerous people off the streets. We should want to know the relationship as well between the objective and the burden, right? So even if we believe that the right to free speech is more important in some abstract sense than, for example, the right to public decency, what do we do when we have a 1% burden on speech and a 99% burden on public decency? That's not the same as if those percentages were reversed, even if we think that in some abstract sense, we can say one is more important than the other. Right. This, I think, is the masturbation case implicitly, even if we don't want to admit that that's what's happening, that we're actually making a judgment about the degree of burden on particular kinds of interests. So in short, free speech cases in the real world, when they make contact with reality, tend to be less cases about speech in the abstract, and more often cases about facts and cases about relative institutional competence and cases about proportionality, right? Speech is everywhere, especially in the modern economy, which is an information economy. Burdens on speech are therefore also everywhere. And so in order to think sensibly about those burdens and when we should be very worried about them and when we should be less worried about them, we should be spending more time thinking about standards of proportionality in a transparent and open-minded way, rather than pretending that speech is speech is speech, and therefore always a Trump.